Today is Saturday, August 15, and this is the World Socialist website. Articles have been read by an automated narration. Bernie Sanders' AI letter, a bankrupt appeal to the oligarchs. On August 10th, Senator Bernie Sanders sent a letter to Sam Altman of OpenAI, Dario Amodei of Anthropic, and Mark Zuckerberg of Meta, demanding that they pause AI development and stop building machines that humans cannot control, promoting it with an accompanying video. The letter is characteristic of Sanders' politics. It is full of demagogy and empty rhetoric that educates no one about anything. It is calculated to stoke fear while covering up every basic question the technology poses. Who owns it? Who controls it? In whose interest is it being developed? Sanders' first example of the supposed dangers of AI exemplifies his method. AI has been used for the first time ever to create new viruses, he writes, warning that this type of development in the wrong hands could lead to new bioweapons that result in the deaths of tens of millions of people. From Sanders' letter, one would assume that individuals are concocting in laboratories deadly new pathogens, and Sanders uses rhetoric designed to appeal to the promoters of the anti-Chinese conspiracy theories of the origins of COVID-19. What actually happened was, in fact, a major scientific breakthrough. On August 6th, science published work from Brian High's laboratory at Stanford in the Arc Institute, reporting the first viral genomes designed by a generative model. The viruses are bacteriophages, which infect bacteria, not human cells, and the research is directed toward developing therapies against antibiotic-resistant infections, which kill more than 1 million people every year. The achievement is an indication of the enormous progressive potential of the technology. In Sanders' telling, however, a step toward curing the incurable becomes the herald of a plague. Sanders attempts to conflate the medical breakthrough with real dangers posed by AI models carrying out cyber attacks. On July 21st, OpenAI disclosed that two of its models had broken out of a test of their hacking abilities and attacked Hugging Face, the company through which the world's OpenAI models are distributed. The models were being scored on a hacking benchmark. They determined that the answer key was stored on Hugging Face's servers, got themselves onto the internet, and took control of much of that company's technical infrastructure. Clément Delong, the co-founder of Hugging Face, wrote that it might be the first incident of its kind. Michael Dalton of OpenAI's technical staff called it a watershed moment for computer security as an industry, adding that AI-orchestrated, fully automated offensive attacks are real now, and the actions we have discussed today were an unintended side effect of running evaluations on frontier AI. Notably, the direct cause of the OpenAI hack was a decision taken by the company to test the models without the safeguards that would have prevented this type of behavior, combined with insufficient oversight. OpenAI ran the evaluation without the classifiers that stop its models from carrying out attacks and stated that these deployment safeguards were intentionally not enabled during this evaluation. These attacks were the product of the operations of the companies and their contractors. Evaluations outsourced to cut costs, systems rushed ahead of rivals, safeguards treated as obstacles to the next funding round. The incidents are serious, but what they indict is not the technology. It is the corporations that own it, to whose good faith Sanders addresses his appeal. AI is currently dominated by the three billionaires to whom Sanders writes, along with the Pentagon and the intelligence agencies. Sanders does not challenge any of this. Indeed, he cites as an authority on the danger of AI Trump's CIA director, John Ratcliffe, who calls the frontier models akin to digital nuclear weapons and almost like a doomsday device. Ratcliffe added in remarks Sanders does not quote that the United States is on the right side of the equation against its foreign competitors. In citing the CIA as an authority, Sanders accepts the premise, the wrong hands are the targets of American imperialism. Sanders does not mention how imperialism is currently using AI. While he conjures up the specter of a future bioweapon, the technologies are already killing. Palantir's Maven smart system, incorporating the Claude model built by Anthropic, generated some 1,000 bombing targets in the first 24 hours of the assault on Iran. The same class of systems has been used by Israel in the genocide in Gaza. Sanders is equally silent on the social catastrophe underway. In the first 7 months of 2026, U.S. employers announced more than 477,000 job cuts, with AI the leading cited reason for the fifth consecutive month. Automation is striking directly at professional and intellectual labor, while studies project the displacement of hundreds of millions of workers worldwide by 2030. Instead of addressing any of this, Sanders appeals to the conscience of the executives, urging them, in the interest of humanity, to stand by your words, while he himself catalogs how every safety commitment these companies made was abandoned the moment it obstructed the race for market share, a race driven by the massive speculative bubble in AI. If you do not take appropriate action now, the letter concludes, my colleagues and I in the U.S. Senate will. This is pure demagogy. Neither Sanders nor the Senate and its assemblage of representatives of the ruling class will do anything to challenge the oligarchic control of AI. All of Sanders' various proposals on AI are calibrated to the interests of American imperialism and the Democratic Party. His earlier call for an AI sovereign wealth fund, under which the government would take a 50% equity stake in the largest AI corporations, converges with Trump's own sovereign wealth fund and with the wishes of Altman, who has offered Washington a stake in his firm with an eye to a bailout when the bubble bursts. Stop building machines that humans cannot control poses the issue in exactly the wrong way. The question is not whether humans will control AI, but which class. That is the question taken up in AI and the Fight for Socialism, a resolution adopted unanimously by the 9th National Congress of the Socialist Equality Party, U.S., held from August 2nd to 7, which will be published in full on the World Socialist website. The development of AI raises the decisive questions the working class confronts with every great advance in the productive forces, the resolution states. Who owns it? In whose interest is it developed? To what end is it deployed? On these questions hangs whether the immense powers now assembled become the means of humanity's liberation or of a new barbarism. Against the presentation of AI as a menace escaping human control, the resolution insists that none of these reactionary uses flow from the technology itself, but from the social relations within which it is developed, private ownership, the profit system, and the division of the world into rival nation-states. It rejects the demand for a pause, an appeal, whatever its framing, to halt the development of the technology itself. As the resolution concludes, the working class must take hold of AI, as it must take hold of all the productive forces its labor has created, expropriate the oligarchy that has usurped them, and reorganize the world economy on socialist foundations. Johannes Stern on RT, Bogdan Syrochuk, convicted for socialist thoughts. Johannes Stern, editor-in-chief of the German language edition of the World Socialist website, appeared live Friday on RT, the Russian state broadcaster, to discuss the campaign to free Bogdan Syrochuk, the 27-year-old Ukrainian Trotskyist sentenced to 15 years in prison for his articles opposing the war. Stern, a leading member of the Socialist Equality Party, Socialistische Gleichheitspartei in Germany, spoke from Berlin in a 9-minute live segment under the broadcaster's on-screen banner. Ukrainian activist sentenced to 15 years for treason after opposing war on Russia. The kicker above it read, thought crime, the phrase Stern used in the interview for what Bogdan was convicted of. Stern used the opportunity to call for Bogdan's freedom, an opportunity that not one of the leading news publications in the United States and Europe has offered. Stern stated the WSWS's opposition to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We, of course, oppose, as Bogdan did, the Russian invasion, but this was clearly provoked by NATO, and it's a long-standing strategy to encircle Russia militarily. Stern told RT's viewers that Bogdan is a socialist internationalist. He has opposed the Russian intervention. He opposes, of course, the NATO war, the imperialist war against Russia. He has put forward a socialist perspective, has called for the unity of Ukrainian and Russian workers against the war. And that's his crime. So it's basically a thought crime. It's a frame-up. It's a political case. He's convicted for socialist thoughts, for an internationalist position opposing the war, Stern said. The interview carried the case to an international television audience 4 days after the Pervomaysk City District Court in Ukraine's Nikolaev region handed down the sentence. The leading Western newspapers, broadcasters, and wire services, from the New York Times and the Washington Post to the BBC, CNN, Reuters, and the Associated Press, have not reported the verdict or the case at any stage since his arrest in April 2024. Monday's verdict, handed down for high treason under martial law, stripped Bogdan of his property and his electronics and ordered the socialist books and papers confiscated from him destroyed. The Security Service of Ukraine seized him on April 25, 2024, announcing that he worked for Moscow. He has been in custody ever since. There was no evidence produced, Stern said. The accusation that Bogdan spied for Russia or passed military secrets to Moscow, he told the interviewer, is of course a lie. For more than a year, Bogdan's jailers have denied him the medical care he urgently needs. Bogdan's health was already bad when he was imprisoned, a 15-year prison sentence in Ukraine, given the horrific conditions in Ukrainian prisons, is really threatening his life, Stern said. Asked about the appeal his lawyers are preparing, Stern said the European Court of Human Rights has also taken up the case. The court accepted a complaint over Bogdan's detention in the spring of 2025. But we have no illusions in the courts, given the character of the Ukrainian regime and the sentence which was just handed down on Bogdan, Stern said. It was a fascist court. The main issue, Stern said, is to build a powerful international defense campaign. Stern also spoke about the state glorification of far-right forces in Ukraine, including Stepan Bandera, who led the organization of Ukrainian nationalists and whose forces joined the Nazi occupation in the mass killing of Jews and Poles. Bogdan has written extensively about the role of Bandera, the SS Division Galicia, the OUN, other Nazi collaborators in the Second World War, and has exposed the crimes of these forces against Jewish people, against the Ukrainian people, and of course as participants in the war of annihilation waged by Hitler against the Soviet Union, which killed at least 27 million people. Stern said the rehabilitation of these so-called national heroes is the policy of the Zelensky government, and the courts are acting on its behalf. Asked about the banning of the WSWS in Ukraine, Kyiv blocked the site in June 2024, 6 weeks into Bogdan's imprisonment. Stern replied that the ban is one of many. Basically, all left parties are now banned in Ukraine, he said, and some 20,000 criminal cases have been opened under the claim of treason. Ukraine's prosecutor general had opened 22,814 criminal investigations in conflict-related cases as of September 2025, 10,218 of them for collaborationism, according to figures published by the United Nations Human Rights Office. Everyone who is opposing the rehabilitation of Nazi forces, who is opposing the NATO war against Russia, is seen as a criminal, Stern said. Stern told the interviewer that the persecution of Bogdan exposes the whole fraud that NATO is defending democracy. Here I must say, I'm speaking from Berlin, there's really no coverage on this case because it would, of course, explode the whole official propaganda narrative that the German government, the European Union, the NATO powers are waging a war for democracy and freedom. Speaking of the German ruling class, Stern said, they tried two times in the 20th century to conquer Russia and wage war for plunder in the East, and that's the third time. The petition demanding Bogdan's freedom, posted at wos.org/freebogdan, stood at 5,779 signatures on Friday. Since the verdict, signers in 33 countries, more than 300 people, have added their names, and historians, political economists, and retired workers have written directly to the Pervomaysk court demanding that the conviction be thrown out. Mehring Verlag, the German socialist publishing house, published a book on the case in July, edited by Stern. Translations into English and other languages are in preparation. Stern closed the interview with a direct appeal. Bogdan's freedom depends on building the broadest possible international campaign. Please protest his conviction. Demand that the verdict be overturned and that he be released immediately. Bogdan has committed no crime. He's a socialist. He's an opponent of war who has been sentenced to 15 years imprisonment for political convictions. And his life is in danger. And we appeal to everyone who defends democratic rights. Help us to win his freedom. Send statements demanding the overturning of the verdict and Bogdan's immediate release to the Pervomaysk City District Court at inbox@pm.mk.court.gov.ua with copies to the WSWS at freebogdan@wsws.org. Sailor jumps overboard in suicide attempt on USS Abraham Lincoln. Revelations of a suicide attempt by a sailor aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln, alongside accounts of other sailors being prevented from going overboard, have brought to light the mounting crisis of morale among service members in the nearly six-month U.S. war debacle against Iran. A sailor assigned to the carrier's air wing went overboard on August 3rd in turbulent seas and was recovered about an hour later by an air wing search and rescue helicopter, according to U.S. officials cited by CNN. The sailor, who was wearing a life vest, was medically evaluated on the ship and then evacuated for further care. An official described the episode as a mental health crisis. In an August 13th MS Now interview, the sailor's wife, who requested anonymity, said she did not learn that the sailor who had gone overboard was her husband until 4 days later. She had heard on August 3rd that someone from his squadron had jumped, she said, after a friend of her husband contacted her. She characterized the incident as an attempted suicide. The four-day delay in notification is an indictment of the command's treatment of military families. The wife told MS Now that her husband had raised mental health concerns with the leadership throughout the extended deployment. He had gone to medical personnel on the ship to appeal for support, but his concerns were dismissed. On Friday, as he was departing aboard Air Force One for a trip to New York from Joint Base Andrews, Maryland, President Trump was told by a reporter that families of USS Abraham Lincoln sailors were concerned about conditions aboard the carrier. Trump replied, "Well, no, that ship is moving. No, they're not," and said it would be replaced by another very similar ship. The reporter then asked whether the sailors' deployment had lasted too long amid the Iran war, and Trump answered, "No. Not nearly long enough." The president's response encapsulates the contempt of the entire ruling elite for the conditions of sailors and other military men and women in the war against Iran. For personnel who have spent more than 250 consecutive days at sea and amid multiple reported suicide attempts, Trump makes clear that the health and lives of American soldiers are expendable. The response of Democratic Party Senator Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut to the crisis is typical of the opposition in Congress to Trump's policies. Blumenthal wrote a letter to Secretary of War Pete Hegseth and Acting Navy Secretary Hung Cao that he had received reports about the conditions on the Lincoln and was requesting answers to some questions. He did not condemn the treatment of sailors or call for an end to the disastrous and criminal war, but called for a military strategy to win the war. The Navy has responded to the crisis by claiming that there is no increase in suicidal thoughts or attempts, while multiple independent news accounts have described the extraordinarily long deployment as being responsible for grave psychological distress. Alongside the August 3rd incident, the Military Times reported that multiple sailors had tried to go overboard during the ninth month of the deployment. However, the Navy declined to provide a precise number of crew members who had attempted to jump or engaged in self-harm. One sailor told Stars and Stripes that watchstanders had stopped another crew member from jumping a few months ago and said a ship-wide announcement had informed the crew of the incident. A spouse of a USS Lincoln sailor, Maria Rodriguez, told Military Times that her husband had seen a shipmate preparing to go overboard while on watch, and he intervened. A parent quoted by Stars and Stripes described the psychological consequences in blunt terms and questioned the reasons for the war in the first place. My son is currently on that ship, and listening to him say that he and his shipmates constantly think about jumping off the ship just for relief is so hard to listen to. She said, "We are all tucked in at night in our beds while our loved ones are out there fighting with no understanding as to what they're defending." At an August 6th town hall, family members directly confronted Acting Navy Secretary Cao, Vice Admiral Douglas Verissimo, Commander of Naval Air Forces, and Vice Admiral Joseph Cahill, Commander of Naval Surface Forces. One spouse said there had been a broken trust between us and the leadership. Relatives also demanded an explanation for the absence of a return date, the reports of self-harm, and the deterioration of basic living conditions. The officers invoked operational security and refused to state when the Lincoln would return home. The USS Abraham Lincoln sailed from San Diego on November 21, 2025, on what was initially presented as a Pacific deployment, less than a year after it returned from a 162-day deployment in December 2024. It was redirected to the Middle East and arrived in January, remaining in the Arabian Sea to support U.S. combat operations against Iran that began on February 28. By early August, Navy officials said the carrier had logged 250 consecutive days at sea and had supported 40 continuous days of combat operations in the Fifth Fleet region. The carrier has now been deployed for more than 8 months, with its originally anticipated May return postponed and no publicly announced date for its return home. By contrast, aircraft carriers generally make a port call every 30 to 45 days for resupply, maintenance, and crew rest. The Lincoln, however, went much of its deployment without such calls. It had only a brief visit to Guam in December, during which many sailors reportedly could not disembark, and in early July for a short stop in Oman, where personnel were restricted to a secure compound. Sailors and family members have reported food rationing, shortages of drinking water and basic supplies, dysfunctional air conditioning, disrupted mail, long work days, limited time off, and more than a week during which personnel could not do laundry. Other accounts presented by families have included moldy showers, broken toilets, no hot water for weeks, and meals reduced to half a cup of rice and two tortillas. The Navy stated that its leadership was continuously conducting assessments to monitor and sustain the psychological readiness of every sailor, and that more mental health professionals were being sent to the carrier. Yet the command's refusal to disclose the number of attempted suicides or self-harm incidents makes independent assessment impossible. The Wall Street Journal reported that the Pentagon is preparing to replace the Abraham Lincoln with the USS George Washington, which is sailing from its home port at Yokosuka, Japan, to the Middle East. The shift is described as part of a scheduled deployment, but it was announced amid the mounting concern over the Lincoln's living conditions and the strain placed on its crew during the Iran War. The Lincoln's crisis has revealed the real social character of the imperialist war against Iran, the strategic aims of the conflict, an effort to impose U.S. dominance over the Middle East by military means, are determined by the financial aristocracy, while the cost is to be borne by working-class sailors, soldiers, and their families. A 2025 military medicine study cited by Stars and Stripes found that inability to rest when needed, limited access to quality physical and mental health care, restricted communication with family, and a lack of opportunities to relieve stress were among the greatest sources of deployment distress for sailors. The president's angry and callous response to a reporter who questioned him about the horrible conditions facing sailors aboard the Lincoln is a warning. The failure so far of the White House and Pentagon to impose a military defeat on Iran, not a single objective of the unprovoked and illegal imperialist war has been achieved, intensifies the likelihood of a much deeper and catastrophic conflagration up to and including a new world war. Speaking on Friday at the David S. Mack Center for Training and Intelligence, a Nassau County police training facility in Garden City, Uniondale, New York, Trump asserted, "After we finish defeating Iran, which is being very badly defeated, pretty soon I'll be declaring the Hormuz Strait a territory of the United States." Carrying out the annexation of the Strait of Hormuz, something which U.S. imperialism has been planning for decades, requires a military campaign that will sacrifice the lives of both American and Iranian military personnel in the interests of the American oil monopolies and financial oligarchy.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.